Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters Today, this lovely Sunday, August 6, 2006. I'm Bob McChesney, coming to you from Campbell Hall on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign on a truly beautiful summer afternoon in the Midwest. Today we have as our guest one of the great journalists of our times, editor of In These Times, the monthly newspaper coming from Chicago for the past 30 years, and co-author of the brand new book, Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? Join us today with Joel Blythus here on Media Matters. But first, let's go to Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
The phone and cable companies leading the push to do away with network neutrality online say they need to charge internet users more in order to build more capacity into their networks, overlooking the fact that in the 1990s, various federal and state laws were changed to give telecom companies incentives to build out mega broadband networks, and that they recouped some $200 billion from a project on which they did not deliver. These companies aren't exactly hurting for cash today. For example, AT&T's financial figures for the second quarter of 2006 have been released, and it's been a very good year so far. AT&T's profits are up 81% from just a year ago. The conglomerate made nearly $2 billion in profit between April and June on almost $16 billion in revenue. It can attribute a part of its good fortune to an influx of cash from the merger of AT&T with SBC last year, as well as the layoff of several thousand employees since the start of 2006, more than half of whom lost their jobs in the second quarter. The company now expects profit margins on its products to rise as high as 18%. Even the smallest of the baby bells, Quest, has turned a healthy profit so far this year, something it hasn't done since the year 2000. As for the cable companies, the largest of the bunch, Comcast, is also rolling in the dough. It made $460 million in profits during the second quarter of this year, up 7% over last year, and it expects yearly earnings to rise some 13%. Shares of stock in Comcast have risen 20% in the last 3 months. However, Comcast at least admits that it's benefiting from a lack of competition between phone and cable companies. They compete just as much as they need to, but neither side are slashing prices in order to try and woo the other's customers. That's the definition of duopoly in a nutshell. This is how they can spend some $100 million on high-stakes lobbying and misleading AstroTurf PR campaigns attacking the principle of network neutrality. The latter has attracted the attention of a group of public relations professionals who now call the practice of using fake grassroots organizations, quote, anti-democratic, unethical, immoral, and often illegal, and are working on a campaign to raise awareness of the tactic and convince other PR professionals to stop using it. And finally, here's a good example of how the lack of network neutrality leads to higher prices and less consumer freedom. Singular Wireless, a joint venture of AT&T and Bell South, which AT&T is in the process of purchasing, has announced plans to charge customers with older cell phones an extra $5 a month starting next month. Singular wants to phase out older phones, which are only partially compatible with its new wireless network infrastructure. Nearly 5 million people will be forced to pay extra, either through the new charge or by buying a newer, more expensive phone. And will these new technologies actually bring benefits to the consumer? That depends on who your cell phone service provider is. For example, Verizon has disabled several features on many of its phones, like the ability to download and play music and games unless the content comes from a Verizon-approved source. If network neutrality disappears from the internet, it'll end up more closely resembling such closed networks as cell phone and cable systems.
One of the nice features about digital video recorders has been the functionality which allows TV viewers to skip past the advertisements in their favorite shows. But Philips Electronics has a change of plans in mind. This spring, the company filed for a patent on technology that would disable the fast-forward button on remote controls, unless the hapless viewer paid a fee for the special privilege of skipping past the ads. According to market research into the use of DVRs, 2 out of 3 users skip through commercial breaks. Relatedly, the manufacturers of the TiVo digital video recorder plan to open up its customer research to media executives interested in viewing habits. How do they get this information? Every night, 20,000 of the estimated 4 million TiVo units in circulation report back to corporate headquarters with information on what its owners watched on television that evening and how they watched it. Some advertisers use that information to tweak their spots in hopes of enticing more viewers to actually watch them. While TiVo does disclose to customers that it collects information on their viewing habits, that does not extend to personal information, although at least one TiVo executive would like to see that cataloged as well.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
Okie dokie, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you today, August 6, 2006. Here at WILL AM 580 in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. A lovely Sunday afternoon, and thank you all for joining us today. We have a show I've been looking forward to for a long time, and I think a lot of our listeners have too. Our guest today is Joel Bleifuss, a journalist for some 23 years, longtime editor of Indies Times, the now monthly magazine / newspaper out of Chicago that's celebrated its 30th birthday this year. And it's a pleasure to have him here. He's also the author of the brand new book, or the co-author with Steve Freeman, of the brand new book, Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? Exit Polls, Election Fraud, and the Official Count. Joel Bleifuss, welcome to Media Matters.
Glad to be here.
Well, it's really a pleasure to have you here, Joel. And I want to talk today about In These Times, about the state of journalism and the issues that you're covering there at some point in the show. But I think the most important thing to talk about is your new book that you've done with Steve Freeman, Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? Are you going to give us the answer on the show, or do you have to buy the book?
Well, I think there are certainly indications that it might have been. And I think that... I would say that, and as we make the case in the book, that there needs to be a very thorough investigation, and people need to take this possibility very seriously.
Now, we've had Mark Crispin Miller on the air here discussing his book on the subject of the 2004 presidential election called Fooled Again. And, you know, when I was doing research on your book, and I read Mark's book too, and I noticed there have been a few other books and collections done on the subject. What do you think... your book with Steve Freeman, what's the value added you bring to this discussion?
Well, I think a large part of our book, at least half of it, looks directly at the exit polls and examines the exit polls. I think you look at the 2004 election, and first you have sort of the I don't know what you want to call them, the dirty tricks that were done in Ohio, very similar to Florida in 2000 by Catherine Harris. You have all this... suppression of Democratic vote, lots of questions about strange things going on at the county level. Kenneth Blackwell, the Secretary of State, the Republican Secretary of State, was also the chair of the state Bush-Cheney campaign in 2004. So you have first, on the one hand, sort of this long record of attempts to keep Democratic votes down or to prevent Democrats from voting. You combine that with the fact that in 2004, 64% of Americans voted on direct recorded electronic voting machines or optical scan systems, and both of those to different degrees have been shown to be very vulnerable to hacking and programming fraud. In fact, you have the General Accountability Office a year ago said that such systems contain flaws that, quote, could allow unauthorized personnel to disrupt operations or modify data and programs that are critical to the integrity of the voting process, end quote. And just last month, the Brennan Center for Justice examined security flaws in electronic voting machines, and they discovered that it would take just one person with a sophisticated technical knowledge to throw the election in one state using, if they had access and knowledge of the software that runs the voting machines. So you combine those two things, sort of a history of malfeasance, the rush to electronic voting that happened in 2004. Then you combine that with what is the sort of one of the main subjects of our book, which is the exit polls, which were far, far off in every single state. And so there has to be an explanation for that.
Our guest today on Media Matters is Joel Bleifuss, editor of In These Times, the newspaper magazine coming out of Chicago, and also the co-author with Steve Freeman of the new book, Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? Exit Polls, Election Fraud, and the Official Count. And Joel, I've known you for many years now, probably 15 years at least, and I've always known you to be a fairly cautious reporter. So I was, I wouldn't say I was shocked, but I was mildly surprised to hear that you were doing a book on this topic, because immediately following the 2004 election, you know, I think people who raised this issue were regarded as sort of part of the UFO crowd, you know, crazy conspiracy theorists. And you always struck me as a very cautious person. And I know Steve Freeman, your co-author, would also qualify for that classification. And one of the things that struck me about the title of your book, and always struck me as the most interesting part of this whole debate over elections, was this very issue of exit polls. And I know a lot of our listeners, and I think myself too, you know, I'd always understood that exit polls were, you know, almost the gold standard for how a vote would turn out, that it was so scientific by which precinct you went to, the getting people coming right out of the polls, they almost were never, ever wrong. And then suddenly, like you said, in 2004, the exit polls not only were a little bit wrong, they seemed to be way off from the actual results.
Yes, that's certainly the case. And particularly, they were most off in the 11 battleground states and extremely off in the key states of Ohio and Pennsylvania. And so it just doesn't make sense. There can be valid reasons for an exit poll to be off. But you have to then say, well, what is that reason? Why did these exit polls all err in one direction?
And they all erred. I mean, they weren't, like in some states, erring pro-Democratic or too heavily for the Democrats, in some states too heavily Republican. They all went the same way.
They all went the same way toward Bush, yes.
All the exit polls showed Kerry doing better than he actually did in the final tally.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
And so there have been, you know, various explanations put forward for this. One of which, the main one, is that the Republicans refused to answer the exit pollster questionnaire in disproportionate amounts. And so, therefore, this is one reason that is given for the try to explain why there was this big discrepancy, is that Republicans didn't answer the exit polls. But if you go back to the pollster's data that they have released, you find that in the most heavily Republican precincts, you had the highest response rates of exit polls. So the idea that that would sort of indicate that Republicans weren't hesitant to answer exit polls.
Also, you'd have to ask, why was it that Republicans were so forthcoming in every other election until 2004? Would
exactly.
They suddenly get cold feet to talk to a pollster?
Mm-hmm. In Germany, for example, they count the ballots by hand, and the official count takes about a week, but they use exit poll results to call the election because they're that accurate. In Britain, in the last election for the House of Parliament, the exit polls were accurate to within a point, up and down for every party. And so here we have these huge discrepancies between the official count and the exit polls in the United States, and particularly in the key battleground states. And I think that raises a red flag.
Now, did they possibly, the people who did the exit polls in these other states, did they hire some like college interns to do them and get rid of the people who were professionals?
No, they've always hired part-time workers to do them. And that's the pollsters, Warren Matosky and Joe Linsky. Their explanation for it, the only explanation they could come up with for the discrepancy was that certain types of people that they hired had different results, and so that if you were college educated, your results would be skewed toward the Democrats because you only approach Democrats or something like that. They have this sort of convoluted explanation that we deal with at length in the book about how this could have happened, that there would be fewer Republicans answering the exit polls and more Democrats, but we don't think it holds up. And particularly, I think, interesting is the fact that if you look, and the data they released was on the voter survey of voter characteristics. So they released data that showed how people voted by race, sex, age, etc. And the pollsters, they didn't release the data that is at the precinct level, that you would say identify the precinct with the vote in that precinct. And if we had that data, then we could examine if the discrepancy was higher in counties that had certain types of voting machines, say electronic voting. Because the data they did release for some areas showed that the only place where there wasn't a discrepancy was in rural and small towns that used paper ballots. In those precincts, there was no discrepancy between how voters said they voted and the election results. But in those rural areas and small towns that used other types of voting machines, there was a discrepancy.
Our guest today on Media Matters is Joel Bleifuss, editor of In These Times and co-author with Steve Freeman of the brand new book, Was the 2004 Presidential Election, Exit Polls, Election Fraud, and the Official Count, which is shooting up the bestseller list based on my cursory examination of the topic this weekend. And if you'd like to call in with a question for Joel Bleifuss, the number here at Media Matters is 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. The lines are open, and let me remind listeners that Joel Bleifuss covers the entire range of politics as editor of In These Times and is willing and able to talk on any issue you can possibly raise about politics or journalism or media. Although we are talking now about the new book, Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? And Joel Bleifuss, you're talking about the discrepancy between the exit polls and the outcome, especially it appears in precincts or areas with electronic voting. The exit poll part I get, and I see the discrepancy, and I think empirically that's evidence to me that's very striking and unavoidable. Where I have trouble piecing the argument together is with, you know, how the actual fraud is perpetrated, who does it, you know, where the orders come from, how it's orchestrated. Do you get into that at all in the book?
Yes, we do. And we have a whole chapter on electronic voting and the problems with it. And this is one thing, one sort of reason that a lot of people gave that there couldn't have been any election fraud, because they would say that the conspiracy would have to be so large and so vast that it wouldn't be possible to keep it secret. But with electronic voting and with certain optical scan voting systems, it just takes one person with knowledge of that system to swing the vote in a state, according to the Brennan Center. There was in Leon County, Florida, the supervisor of elections, Ian Sancho, authorized a test of his Diebold voting systems that they had bought, and he brought in a computer programmer to do the test. So what they did, they had people vote on their systems and then write their vote. And then they let the computer programmer come in, and he was able to alter, you know, using a memory card, the final result so that it was significantly different from how people said they voted on paper during this test. You know, all of which shows that if it doesn't take a whole lot of people to sort of swing an election when you have these voting systems which are totally unregulated.
And then the only way you can check that to see if there's been any hanky-panky is using exit polls. I mean, because there's no paper trail?
There's no paper trail, exactly.
So, yeah. Our guest today on Media Matters, Joel Bleifuss, the co-author with Steve Freeman of Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? Please call in if you have questions at 333-9455, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. One quick question, Joel, before we get to our patient callers. How important, in this case, with these electronic voting machines, then, is the position in each state of, I guess, what is generally called the Secretary of State, the person in charge of elections and seeing if they're fair? And it seems from Ohio and Florida that these have been partisan positions with people with a real stake in the outcome. It's sort of like the referee is also coach for one of the teams.
Yes, and that's exactly the case. And that's one of the reasons why former President Jimmy Carter's voting center in Florida, he said prior to the 2004 election that he could not sort of monitor the U.S. election because it doesn't meet his standards for a fair election, because there is such partisanship within the voting administration.
Now, in fairness to the Republicans, are there Democratic secretaries of state around the country in certain states who are pulling the same, where the same shenanigans are going on from your research?
Well, when we did a correlation between the size of the exit poll discrepancies in each state and, you know, who controlled the sort of voting administration in that state, and there was a very discernible sort of shift that indicated the size of the discrepancy was greater in those states where Republicans controlled the Secretary of State's office. And if we had the precinct-level data, then we would be able to see if that was also comparable in counties, because the whole voting system in this country is so decentralized that that was one of the sort of safeguards against fraud before, because you had so many different people involved. But now with these electronic voting machines that have no safeguards, one person can sort of come in.
Go ahead, Joel.
I was just to remind people that we sort of entered this world, this nightmare of electronic voting, following the 2000 election in Florida, when there were so many problems with the punch card system. So the Help America Vote Act, passed by Congress, mandated that government switch to away from punch card voting, and so there was this rush into electronic voting machines, none of which. And so the companies, you know, had to turn out these machines very quickly. And part of the criticism of them is that they had such a huge number of orders and had so many to sort of sell that there weren't safeguards put in place or the necessary governmental controls placed on their manufacturing.
You know, when you hear the name Diebold, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, the voting machine manufacturer. It's almost become sort of like a punchline that if you want to talk about a sort of a corrupt company that, you know, you shouldn't trust, it's Diebold for their links to the Republican Party. Is there anything to that, or is that sort of deep end stuff?
No, I think there's something definitely to it. I'm not sure exactly how deeply the company itself was, or whether the material, how deeply involved they were, or whether just that the machines they made were so vulnerable to hacking by insiders. But interestingly, I think a significant development on that front was that in July, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Filed a key TAM lawsuit in U.S. District Court, alleging that Diebold and other electronic voting machine manufacturers had fraudulently represented to state election boards that their machines were unhackable. And according to Kennedy, he has insiders from Diebold who are willing to testify that they were selling machines that had great security flaws. So I think as this comes out and as the suit progresses, the public will learn more about it. So
now, theoretically, this should be something it shouldn't require a private citizen to press a lawsuit. Shouldn't this be something the government should be doing?
Exactly.
Okay. Our guest today is Joel Bleifuss. You're listening to Media Matters on WILL AM 580. That's a call with a question for Joel Bleifuss, the co-author of the new book, Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? Our number, 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to the phone lines where we have many patient callers waiting. Line 4, San Francisco, you're on the air with Joel Bleifuss.
Hey, as this is a show about the media, you know, I think it's interesting that it's pretty common knowledge that these machines can be hacked. It's been clearly proven, and it's the information is quite available on the web and very seldom related in the mass media. But I'd also add today is there's very little mass media reporting about what's going on in Mexico with the election the Obrador Calderon election, where people are literally in the streets camping out and fighting for the right of their votes. And I wonder if your guest would comment about how the reaction in Mexico might be related to our experience here in America.
Joel?
I followed what's going on in Mexico somewhat. I know that the exit poll discrepancies, the exit polls were much closer to the actual result in Mexico, so you don't have this indication of fraud that an exit poll that was way far off would sort of have. And also the sort of the Mexican electoral apparatus has administration has a fairly good reputation. And that said, I know that they're very, you know, significant questions about the validity of the election. But according to the exit polls, it was a very close election.
Now, as you point out in the book and you've mentioned earlier, monkeying with the actual votes isn't the only way elections are stolen. Just not letting some people vote is another way. Was that going on in 2004? As we all know, it took place in 2000?
Oh, yes, definitely. You look at Ohio, and you had people, the misallocation of voting machines within the state of Ohio in inner-city, largely African-American neighborhoods. In Columbus, for example, people were waiting 8-9 hours in line just to vote. Many people went to the polls to vote, but they didn't have the time to spend that, you know, that a whole, you know, work day standing in line to vote. And that, you know, I think should have been considered a crime. It was no surprise. There was huge voter registration drives underway. They knew that this was going to be a very high turnout in Ohio, so there's no excuse for Blackwell and his administration for not to have provided adequate voting machines. And at the same time, in rural areas of the state, there were plenty of machines. Nobody had to wait at all. Likewise, at Kenyon College, students there had to wait 8 hours in line, 7 hours in line, in the rain, I should add, to vote.
Now, in a place like Gambier, Ohio, where Kenyon College is located, would the state of Ohio, Blackwell, the Secretary of State, be the one responsible for the actual voting machines in that little town, or is that a county official or city official?
Well, it would be a mixture of both, because the county officials work with the Secretary of State. And so it's a combination.
We're talking to Joel Bleifuss today in Media Matters, co-author with Steve Freeman of the new book, Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? Exit Polls, Election Fraud, and the Official Count Just Out. When did it come out officially, Joel?
And we were out in July.
In July. So we're in the second month. So it's a brand new book, it's safe to say. Joel Bleifuss is also a longtime editor of In These Times, the now monthly newspaper magazine out of Chicago, to which I've been a reader for its entire history of 30 years. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line 1, Chicago, you're on the air with Joel Bleifuss.
Yes, just a couple of quick questions. Can you talk to the kinds of statistical analyses or statistical tests that you used to discern the difference between, for example, exit polling and the election outcome? And then you mentioned that there is data that could be had at the precinct level that might help determine whether these differences are located in precincts with voting. And I wondered who has that data and how can you get hold of it, or if you can speak to that some. Thanks.
Thank you, caller.
Well, the statistics, and my co-author is sort of the expert on that, the statistics about the discrepancy are... I don't think that there's nobody disputes the fact that the exit polls were way out of bounds and outside the statistical margin of error. That's something that's an absolute given. So what's being debated is the reason for that that discrepancy and the size of the discrepancy and how it could be explained as being so large. The exit polls were commissioned by, six media groups or media organizations, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, CNN, and the Associated Press. And they hired Warren Mitofsky, who's the father of exit polling and who does exit polls around the world, to do the exit polls. And so it's sort of unclear who controls the data, but it was commissioned by these media people, and Mitofsky and Edison, or Warren Mitofsky and Joe Lenski of Edison Election Research. Those were the people who did the poll. So I think they control access to that data. And what they released was precinct-level data that talked about people, that talked about votes and vote results based on race, age, etc. And so they make the argument, and this is, I think, very convoluted, but that they cannot now release data from the exact precincts because say you had one African-American voter in that precinct, one would be able to look at that precinct and tell how that person voted, and therefore their vote would not be secure or not be kept private.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the excuse they give, which for not releasing this wider data.
Joel, I have a question I wonder about, and your book is a good opportunity to raise it. I recall immediately after the election in November 2004 when, Vice presidential candidate Edwards said that, they were going to count all the votes, make sure they were all counted before they conceded anything. And then presidential candidate Kerry immediately conceded the day after the election before the votes had all been counted. Sort of to the surprise of a lot of people. But shortly thereafter that, there was, of course, the internet was flooded with people saying there's something wrong here. The vote doesn't square. What's going on with the exit polls? And the New York Times ran an article above the fold within a few days of the election, basically dismissing this as a bunch of UFO lunatics types, that everyone acknowledges that, that Bush had won re-election and won Ohio fair and square. And I had a guest on this program immediately following the election, Norman Solomon, a highly regarded progressive journalist. And Norman poo-pooed the whole story, too. As did not just Norman, but everyone I spoke to after that, that didn't want to be associated with this story because they thought it smacked too much of conspiracy theory and sort of drinking the Kool-Aid style stuff. Has the press coverage gotten better? I mean, how is the media handling this issue since then, starting from the premise that initial response was absolute dismissal as something not to be taken seriously?
Well, I think that's another interesting sort of story about this, and we devote a whole chapter in our book to looking at the media response. And so what you do, following the 2004 election, you had, there was some very wrong information put out indicating by people who weren't quite politically savvy, looking at the results and crying foul. And it was easily refutable, and that was done immediately. And so some of these allegations that immediately sort of surfaced after the election were shot down, and for good reason. And at the same time, you had this voting sort of information voting technology group that's based at MIT and Caltech came out with a report saying that that basically saying that there wasn't a real discrepancy between the poll results, election day polls, exit polls, and the official count. And this was also sort of repeated by the pollsters themselves, who started to say, well, at the beginning of the day, there was this discrepancy, but then it changed by the end of the day. And so what you have coming out of the first 2 days was extraordinary erroneous information, both that was sort of on the side of people saying something was wrong, that was easily dismissed, and from the pollsters themselves that turned out to be inaccurate. And in fact, this MIT Caltech voting project later put a clarification on their website saying that they were mistaken. But in the meantime, that had become front page news on the New York Times, with this very prestigious group saying that there was nothing to this. And that type of analysis carried the day. And so people didn't go back and look at this further after they had received what they assumed was good information.
Now, Bobby Kennedy Jr., as you pointed out, I think influenced by your book, wrote a major long piece in Rolling Stone a few weeks ago that basically said the election was stolen, I think summarizing the argument of not just your research but others, and now leading to this lawsuit. Has this opened up a little space for this conversation on cable news talk shows and in the op-ed pages?
Yeah, I think that the Bobby Kennedy Jr. article in Rolling Stone, which we gave him an early copy of our book, and he used it and for part of the material in his report for Rolling Stone. It's made this a subject of discussion once again, and so it is getting some attention. Yet I think still the media shies away from the subject for a couple of reasons. One, they just can't believe that it would be possible, and perhaps two, that the implications are so dire if it is true that it's sort of something that maybe people would prefer not to think about.
It's also, three, a striking critique of the news media, because if there's any institution that's supposed to be monitoring this on behalf of the citizenry, it would be the news media.
Exactly.
And so it's a major egg ball dropping on their part if, in fact, it was blown. We have a bank of callers I want to get to, but before we do, I just want one other question I want to throw at you, Joel, that follows from this. When I was a young boy, I talked to my mother and father about politics quite a bit, and I asked why elections weren't stolen innocently when I was 10 years old, and my mother said, well, they have someone from both the Republican and Democratic parties always checking the vote to make sure that the other party isn't getting screwed or their party wasn't by the other party. And it made sense to me that there were always Republicans and Democrats verifying the vote at the headquarters to make sure no one is pulling any fast ones. And that leads me to think, where are the Democrats in all this? I mean, here you've had two, if your data is correct and these other data is correct, you've arguably had two presidential elections in a row stolen, where the majority of the voters of this country, the majority of the electoral votes, wanted a Democratic president. Why aren't they raising holy hell on this? I can understand the news media might be timid, but you'd think the Democrats would want their just desserts.
Well, from what we understand, there was a sort of a very heated debate within the Kerry campaign on the evening and morning that he conceded, between Kerry, Edwards wanting to hold out longer and just wait till some questions were answered, and Bob Shrum, who was the Kerry advisor, and he had a very influential role in the campaign. He's the person who, as you recall, had advised Kerry not to respond to the Swift Boat people, and Kerry didn't, which is, was to his detriment. But from what we understand, Shrum was saying, well, if you contest this, if you raise a stink about this, the media will, just turn on you and you'll be a laughing stock. And so I think there was a fear of ridicule on the part of the campaign that, this is a place where you just don't go. And at the time, although there was all this sort of anecdotal evidence coming out of Ohio, the whole scope of the malfeasance in that state wasn't yet public, and is now, I think, there's a very firm record, which sort of shows that the election was stolen in Ohio.
Well, do you get a sense from your covering of this issue recently that the Democrats are more alert to this issue and are going to not allow it to happen again, or do you think they're still sort of asleep at the switch?
Well, I think some Democrats are. I think that Jan Schakowsky, our representative from Chicago, has made some very strong statements on this. If the Democrats control the House in the fall elections, I know that John Conyers will be head of the Judiciary Committee, and he will be holding hearings on this. But I would say that, in a sense, the DNC, the Democratic establishment, is sort of burying its head in the sand.
For John Conyers to become head of the Judiciary Committee, it means the Democrats have to win the House. Well, if the evidence you're presenting is correct, there's no reason to believe the Democrats are going to win the House, even if they have a majority of the voters.
That's very possible, because there'll be more people voting on these voting systems that on which we should have no base faith. It'll be a larger percentage of the American voters in 2006 than in 2004, and even greater in 2008.
Our guest today, Joel Bleifuss on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. This is WILL AM 580 from beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Joel Bleifuss is the editor of In These Times. He's also the co-author with Steve Freeman of the brand new book, Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? Exit Polls, Election Fraud, and the Official Count. Let's go back to the phone lines right now. We've had several very patient callers. Line 2, Fryna, Illinois, hotbed of Media Matters listeners. You're on the air with Joel Bleifuss.
Hi, thank you for this great opportunity, and thank you, Joel Bleifuss, for all your efforts. In regards to John Kerry speaking out both sides of his mouth, why would he do that? Is he a traitor? Was there a gun to his head? Could it be money for someone so wealthy? And were those votes ever counted, and what were the results? And is Congress doing anything about all this? And what happened the UN international monitoring, or is that connected with Jimmy Carter?
Well, that's a lot of questions for you to deal with, Joel.
Well, I think that the one sort of one place to start, and you ask what the Democrats are doing. There is, and this is my co-author, Stephen Freeman, who's sort of an expert in polling and research methodology. He's been talking to the Democratic National Committee and to some public interest groups in Washington about doing exit polls, independent exit polls, in the 2006 election to just check, sort of as a check, to make sure that nothing funny is going on. And so I think that you're going to see an emphasis put on exit polls in both 2006 and 2008.
Maybe you can hire the people from Germany who seem to have a high batting average to do
that. Yeah, exactly. But interestingly enough, it was Warren Mutafsky who did these exit polls here that also does them in Germany.
That's very interesting. Yeah, that is. So that's one thing. Well, her question also is, you know, what else can be done? I mean, what are the solutions for us so we don't feel like our elections are going to be stolen as citizens?
Well, there are now movements in almost every state to demand that there is a verifiable paper trail with voting machines, both electronic voting systems and optical scan systems, in which case then one can have a recount that is meaningful. That's sort of a citizens movement that is taking place at the state level. And that's growing and having success here and there. Of course, it's, you know, once you have these systems are very expensive, and so you're running into both time constraints and sort of public the cost of them. One thing that could happen would be that the federal government could, demand that electronic voting systems have the same security that the slot machines have. I mean, the slot machine industry is. The gaming industry is much more highly regulated than the voting machine industry.
And I understand it also that now Secretary of State, which I think was probably the least cared about position in American government until 2 years ago, these are somehow becoming hotly contested political races.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And there are several challenges going on. They're getting a lot of attention. Let's go back to the phone lines right now. Our guest today, Joel Bleifuss, editor of In These Times, author, co-author of the new book, Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? Line 4, Chicago, you're on there with Joel Bleifuss.
Hello. Thanks for the program. I live on Chicago's North Lakefront. I've poll-watched and troubleshooted in elections since the early 70s. I did volunteer for Jan Schakowsky's first election to Congress in 1998, and at the training session I was told, oh, don't pay any attention to the judges, let them do their job. That was not the way I was trained as an independent with the IPO, the Independent Precinct Organization, and the Independent Voters of Illinois. I later did some ward-wide troubleshooting in various elections for Project LEAP, Legal Elections in All Precincts, which used to work with the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners to work out kinks in the law. Every election they would report problems and work with the board between elections to improve the process. They went out of business a few years ago. And I wonder a couple of things. What is the role for a poll watcher today, unless it is simply to watch the judges and see that they do not deny people the right to vote, or the lineups, in like what happened in Ohio, do not disfranchise people? And something that you two raised after I placed the call, what about the role of the media? Why don't they send reporters to train as poll watchers or troubleshooters and be there and observe the process all day and from the inside and have a little bit more insight to report on it?
Joel Bleifuss?
Well, I think taking up with your last suggestion, I think the media could play a very valuable role in just, for one thing, sort of exposing the electronic voting machine industry and just how in a sense, corruptible our whole voting system is becoming. I think that, you know, some people have heard about this, but it isn't common knowledge. And I think that media has a role to play in sort of demanding accountability from our elected officials, both Democrats and Republicans, that they, take this issue very seriously and get on top of it.
Joel Bleifuss, our guest today in Media Matters. Joel Bleifuss is the co-author of the new book, Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen?, along with Steve Freeman. He's also the editor of In These Times, and the website for In These Times is www.inthesetimes.com.
Right.
So www.inthesetimes.com. Let's go back to the phone lines right now, where we have callers who have been very patiently waiting. Line one, Champagne, you're on the air with Joel Bleifuss.
Thank you. You've gone and worked around the edges of this question already since I dialed in, but given the likelihood of the election this fall being stolen, and as well as, you know, let alone in 2008, you know, I mean, what are we to do about this? Especially if you know, you've got a Congress that's continues to controlled by Republicans, is there anything on the we can do to overturn the situation? Seems like the even now in Mexico, with all the people out in the streets there, they're still not going to be able to get justice, and it just makes you very sort of disheartened.
No, I understand where that disheartened can how one can feel that way, but I don't think that we have any option other than sort of demanding vigilance on part of both our elected officials and the media, that we have some guarantee that elections are clean, and that means cleaning up the electronic voting machine industry. That means having exit polls used to sort of provide a validity that the votes are being counted as cast. And that that the public, you know, sort of take this on as a challenge, as a way of preserving democracy.
Well, Joel Bleifuss, in your research on this book and in the talks you've given, are there Republicans who share these concerns? Is this purely a partisan issue at this point? Some Democrats or some people on the left wing of the political spectrum are interested in it. Some Democrats are concerned but afraid. Some are asleep, and then Republicans are all opposed to like anything like this because they don't mind corruption as long as they win. Is that a fair way to assess it?
No, I don't think so. I think at its basis, it's a nonpartisan issue. You have both, you know, Republican members of Congress who are very concerned about being sure that there's a paper trail. Where it becomes a partisan issue is, you know, in specific cases like Florida with Jeb Bush, former Secretary of State Catherine Harris, in Ohio with Secretary of State Kenneth Blackwell, who, when he, you know, following accusations of fraud against him, he said, well, he, quote-unquote, the last time I looked, Catherine Harris wasn't in the soup line. She was in Congress. And so I think that there are certainly members of the Republican Party that are doing their best to swing elections, but it's...
Well, who are the Republicans who are the ones speaking out against this? I've missed those news reports.
I think that there have been a few congressmen who are on board on this.
Can you give their names, or are they secretive?
I don't know. They haven't.
I don't mean to be hard on you in this, but I would love... Nothing would make me happier than to know who these people were.
Well, maybe I should say that it shouldn't be a partisan issue.
I agree with that. That part I fully agree with. But unfortunately, it seems to be playing out as one, which sort of leads to my next question, which is, if all the facts were reversed, and let's say John Kerry was now our president, and they had all these problems that worked to his advantage with e-voting, with these exit poll, do you think then it might be an issue on Fox News?
I would think most definitely it would, and I think that what the Republicans have going for them that the Democrats don't is an ability to make a public issue. I think it's almost pathetic the way that the Democrats have been unable to sort of get their arms around this issue and demand that something happen.
Our guest today, Joel Bleifuss, the editor of In These Times, the co-author of Steve Freeman of Was the 2004 presidential Election Stolen? Let's go back to the phone lines now to some of our very patient callers. Line 3, Champagne, you're on the air with Joel Bleifuss.
Hi. Getting back to the question of why didn't Kerry contest the 2004 election, I was just wondering, is it possible that Kerry was being the good soldier and that the war in Iraq really was a major factor in his not challenging the results, given that it may have caused some real damage to, you know, our fighting military. And I just wonder if maybe there was some pressure on Kerry behind the scenes by the Pentagon, or I don't know. It's just an idea because the war is such a major thing.
I tend to think that it's a combination of both lack of courage as we were saying earlier, that immediately following the election, there were some sort of erroneous allegations put out about the election being stolen. For example, it was very highly publicized that on the web people were saying, oh, you can look at the voting patterns in Florida and these counties that are heavily Democratic registrants, they all went for Bush. That shows that, you know, there was election fraud, but the people making those allegations forgot or didn't realize that that's the case in the South, that people are registered Democrats, but they vote conservative, and they particularly vote conservative in presidential elections. So you had these examples where the allegations of fraud were sort of undermined from the start, along with sort of misstatements by the pollsters themselves, who perhaps haven't their industry to protect, and for them saying that, you know, there wasn't a problem with the exit polls at all. And then this became the official line, and once it becomes the official line in the media, it's very hard for somebody to stand up and say, hey, you know, we were wrong.
Joel Blythe,
Bob, what do you think about that? I mean, you follow the media.
Well, I'm not sure. That's why I'm having you on the show, so I can get my position straightened out on this one, Joel. But one thing I would like to ask you is, what states do you think that Bush carried, or that Kerry carried in 2004, might have gone the other way if we had had a fully accurate count of the votes on Election Day?
Definitely Ohio.
Ohio would have gone Kerry?
Right, yeah.
How about Florida?
Florida is sort of up in the air. It's not one of the slam dunk states.
Any other states?
I think Ohio's the big one, and that would have swung the election.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there were, what were the other ones?
Let's see, New Mexico, Iowa.
New Mexico, Iowa, Wisconsin. Did Wisconsin go for?
No, Wisconsin went for Kerry, but
Kerry
by about two votes.
Uh-huh. I should have this on the tip of my tongue, but I don't.
But there were other states besides Ohio where your research shows that Kerry would have taken it probably.
Right, yeah. Florida wasn't one of those.
Florida was not
Florida
one.
Was, you know, likely, but not for certain.
So if you put the likelies and the for certains to Kerry together, it's not even that close of an election.
No, it wasn't. Not at all. And especially in the electoral, if you looked at the Electoral College results.
Now, one of the questions the caller just had is there were a bunch of votes that on Election Day in Ohio hadn't been counted yet, a huge number, as I recall, as I've heard, that were not counted when Kerry conceded that, you know, in Ohio. Were those votes ever counted? How many of them were there?
Well, there were there's some debate about this, but there were the provisional ballots, people who one of the results of the 2000 election was that voters could go to, and if they weren't registered and thought they were, they could cast a provisional ballot, which would then be counted if it turned out that they were registered but were at the wrong precinct.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a mixed number of votes, but I think the most sort of damning evidence from Ohio comes from, for example, in Claremont County, where during the recount they discovered that there were Kerry votes that had on optical scan systems that had little oval stickers covering them up so they wouldn't be counted.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no explanation by the people in the election board where those stickers came from or how it was that they were placed over the Kerry votes. And so you, I think you sort of get a preponderance of evidence looking at a variety of counties where there were these sort of anomalies, looking at the exit polls, and then looking at the types of voting technology used, along with the, and that's, you know, for vote transfers, obviously a lot of people didn't get to vote and their votes weren't counted.
Let's go back to the phone lines for our last caller with Joel Bleifuss, our guest today. Joel Bleifuss, the editor of In These Times, co-author with Steve Freeman of the new book, Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? Line two, Media Matters, hotbed of Farina. You're back on the air.
Yay. Thank you very much. I have a comment and a question. Thanks. You've asked the questions, but is there any legislation going through to remedy this situation? And my comment is, I could not believe Ronald Reagan was elected the first time he was elected. I wonder if there was any vote manipulation in 1980. And on top of that, I think the Republicans should just be so ashamed and shamed out of office. And the impeachment has to go forward. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, caller.
Well, I think in 1980, when Reagan was elected, there weren't the exit polls discrepancies.
So, into your research you've done, it's 2000, the first year, at least in modern elections, that you see the emergence of a discrepancy between exit polls and actual outcome?
There have been, on and off in other elections, and we deal with this in the book, there have been discrepancies before, but not in this magnitude and not in this large discrepancy. There were, the Georgia election in 2002 for the Senate was very strange, where you had Cleland running against, I forget his name.
Saxby Chambliss.
Right. And that was, you know, the polls and everything leading up into that indicated that there was, you know, a clear Cleland victory, and he lost.
He was the incumbent Democrat.
The incumbent Democrat, a vet. And that is one state which, you know, had very heavily electronic voting, and it's one of the states that I think is most prime, you know, sort of suspect as to having it thrown an election back in 2002.
Well, by your research, do you have any sense of how many other seats in both the House and Senate have been shifted due to chicanery, that there are more, I would assume, Republicans in this case than there would be had there been fair vote counts?
No, we don't. We sort of look at a few races, but they're not that clear, and we haven't spent that much time looking at them.
You know, we've only got about 30 seconds left, and I'm going to ask you a question that I don't know if you can possibly answer, but is there any sense from your research that people like Dick Cheney, Karl Rove, people at the top of the party are familiar with what's going on, encouraging it, participating in any way, or is this all just sort of solo cell operators?
Well, that's the reason I think that we have the question mark in the title of our book, because what you have are, you know, all these indications that something was wrong and something went wrong, but what you don't have is sort of the proof of specific people being involved and doing specific committing election fraud, and I think that's where, you know, congressional investigation, very serious work by media institutions that have the resources to do.
Well, on that note, Joel Bleifuss, I want to thank you very much for being our guest today in Media Matters. I want to thank my producer Andrew Boyle, Kyle Mabry for being our technical director. I'm Bob McChesney. See you 1 week from today.
Thank you.